Well, good afternoon, and welcome to this series of phonics and reading. Before we begin this class series, I want this class to be something that you can go back to your classroom and incorporate it into with your students. So if you came to this class looking for something specific that you would, maybe you had some reading questions or phonics questions, and something you want to know more about, write that on somewhere on your paper or on the back or wherever, and at the end, I'll ask if you have any questions, or because I want this something you can use, and if I can go tomorrow and the next day and have something ready for you in the next class period, I think would be beneficial for you to use in your classroom. That's what I would have wanted if I was in a class and someone was giving helps for reading or phonics. One thing about phonics is that each curriculum teaches it a little bit differently. In first and second grade, I was taught with Abeka, and I still remember a lot of the drill we did every day, like BL, bull block, CL, cool clock, DR, dur, drum, and so on. We did that every day. As we were learning them. And in my teaching experience, I've taught BSR, Pathway, CLE, and there are many more out there, Rod and Staff, any of the others that you may be teaching or that you know that you'll be teaching this year? Maybe just for my information, how many of you are teaching CLE? Quite a few of you. So I'll probably be drawing a lot from that just because that's what I've taught for the last how many years. And not that CLE, I would say CLE is one of the better ones I've come across that has, and I try to incorporate everything that they give you, and it makes it easier, especially for new teachers, I think. I even add things that I found from other curriculums and things I found to that, because different students learn differently. So I first wanted to look at scripture to see why we even teach. And in 1 Peter 4:10 it says, "As every man hath received the gift, even so minister the same one to another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God." And this verse, I'm sure, has helped the early Christians know how to live their lives so that they would glorify God in all that they did. And each of us should use whatever gift we have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace, particularly in our role as teachers of young children. And in one verse, I thought that it's kind of relatable to teachers. It's not really speaking to teachers, but the verse of, "Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it," Proverbs 22:6. We know this verse is talking to parents and they're with their children, but another way I thought looking at it, it was from a teacher to a student perspective. We have a responsibility as a teacher to teach our students to the best of our ability. And that's why I like meetings like this, because when I first started teaching, I felt like I didn't know how to teach. I wasn't one of those people that, oh, I just dream of being a teacher and I want to soak everything in that I know so much from the teacher that taught me previously. No, I never thought I would ever be a teacher. But in looking back now at my years of teaching, I would say I relied heavily on the advice of other teachers and parents, and sometimes that is a good thing and sometimes not, doesn't work so well. And so you do have to be careful where you go and seek your advice from. Teaching is the best way we know, to the best we know, demonstrating a positive, loving attitude toward every child under our instruction. And what greater purpose of a teacher is to reflect God's image for our students to see. and it's our responsibility to use the time God has given to us by their parents and use our time wisely. We also have an influence as a teacher. Children are sponges, and they just soak up everything they learn. And they want to please you. And they can also soak up bad or a negative influence. Sometimes they even mimic the mannerisms of their teacher. Or they'll go home and say, but my teacher said this, and my teacher said that. They'll do and say the same things that we do from time to time even. And they imitate us. And if we are imitating God, they will grow up knowing what it means to follow Christ. So next I want to look a little bit of why teach. Maybe not specifically why teach phonics, but it's relatable to that. So first of all, teachers are an influence. Being a teacher is not only challenging, but also exciting and rewarding. And we could be a positive influence, like I mentioned before, or we could have a negative impact. And we make a difference in their lives every day that we're with them. Every day presents a new opportunity to impact their life, contribute to their individual growth, and give them hope for the future. And in my study of this, there was a lot of things that said research says, well, the research indicates a teacher's influence is the most important factor in a student's academic success. And so it's kind of scary, is like how much we have that influence over other people's children. And there's a tremendous satisfaction in watching a child discover a new concept. As the poet William Butler Yeats said, education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire. And that also can be a negative influence, like I mentioned. But we can do our best for our students through prayer, taking time, spending time with God, and letting Him help us and be the person we go to for help, and taking time for ourselves to be filled, because we can't give to somebody else if there's nothing to give. And there's many more ways that may be also. The second one is teachers are lifelong learners. Interesting, I ask people or other teachers why they teach, and I've gotten quite a few different answers. But it seems like all teachers, they teach too because they like to learn. And not only do we explore and discover new topics and ways of teaching or tools for teaching on a regular basis, but we develop more skills as we teach. We can also develop more skills through our regular interactions with our students, the parents, and other teachers. And the only reason I always tell people I agree to even teach a topic is because it's not something I like to do. It's reaching out into my comfort zone. I'd much rather you all be first graders. Somehow that makes it easier. And also, another reason is it also makes me take the time to learn. I'm learning something. I've learned so much through just looking into phonics. I didn't realize there was so much to it. I just thought, okay, you teach them the sounds, and you teach them the words, and it goes on. You teach them to read. Well, there's actually quite a few different types of phonics, and some I wouldn't even call phonics, really. Number three, teaching is also an outlet for creativity. It's impressive, I would say, how creative a lot of teachers are. The need to engage all students in learning, be able to teach our students, calls a teacher to be creative in adapting, maybe, and developing learning activities. So that they can learn. Maybe they learn a different way than their fellow student does. And so you need to come up with something that they can learn also. And usually if I do that, I try to just have everybody do it. And the new technology we have nowadays, not that I would be into all that. I would say I'm just definitely not computer savvy, but they allow us to a broader being able to more information to bring to our classrooms. And the opportunities for trying new and exciting approaches to learning are endless if you just go and look for them. I looked through bookstores and I went to our, I don't know if any of you have heard of Exodus. If you have a chance to go there, it's up near Portland. That is an, there's amazing things in there and all kinds of things you can incorporate into your classroom. The fourth one is we have a work environment that is never dull. And as teachers, we know that there are no 2 days that are alike. And that might be because of the variety of people we come in contact with, the changing challenges of what we're teaching, the daily discoveries all combined to make teaching an interesting and engaging adventure. And number five, we have the ability to change the future. As the author Henry B. Adams said, a teacher affects eternity. He can never tell us where his influence, he can never tell where his influence stops. And as a teacher and astronaut, Krista, I forgot to get how to say her last name, McAuliffe, or Olive. Anyway, put it, I touch the future, I teach. And I've seen that on lots of different teacher things. So today, we want to kind of liken learning how to read to learning to drive. And I guess I imagine everybody has driven, drive here. Well, do you remember the first time when you first learned how to drive? Do you remember that feeling? Feeling of independence, freedom? I do. I got that little booklet from DMV and I read it and read it. I studied the laws of the road. You know, red light, green light, four-way stop. You have a gas brake, steering wheel. Well, I took the test for the learner's permit, and I was pleased I passed the first time because I've had siblings that didn't. And so now I can drive. I can go somewhere, you know, all by myself if I wanted to. And you have that excitement of something new. And I just couldn't wait to get behind the wheel. And when you're handed the keys for the first time to a vehicle and being told to drive, was a, at least for me, it was a wonderful feeling. But can you imagine if your dad, mom, whoever, says to you on your first time driving, hey, we're going to, and I put Mount Hood, because that's somewhere that's kind of close to us, we're going to Mount Hood, and you're going to drive the whole family. The first time that you've ever drove. So I would say Mount Hood's about an hour. Well, I'm sure you can imagine why he wouldn't say that. For one, you would never ask a teenager who just passed the learner's permit and ask them to drive such a challenging route with in a vehicle with everyone that you love most in the car. Why? Well, I had no driving experience. And even though I got good grades at school, I thought I would consider myself responsible. How could I possibly, though, be a good driver, good safe driver without any experience? We all know that the facts and the laws of the, that were in that little booklet, they don't actually really mean as much until you actually put them to practice. And so, but the little book of laws, they teach you that the car's brake is on the floor, but do they tell you that in your car that it's extra sensitive? If you press it too hard, you can jerk to a stop. Does it tell you if a car what to do if a car randomly swerves in front of you? But so memorizing the rules of the road and actually driving safely on the road are two totally different things. So yes, indeed, I had that head knowledge, but I also needed the driving experience. And that is what happens with phonics and reading instruction. We teach students the phonics skills, and then they memorize them for the most part. They memorize the... There are sight words that they have to memorize, but with phonics, you don't have... There's a lot less memorizing than if they didn't. They need to memorize, like, the sounds of the letters and things like that. And then if we would send them to Mount Hood, in quotes, we'd probably wonder why they struggled to make it up the mountain. Students need explicit phonics instruction, and I didn't realize there was a certain phonics that was different from the other, but it's explicit phonics. And they also need reading experience in order to become confident, fluent readers. I'm going to share a little bit of how I make sure that my students learn and apply the phonics skills that I teach. And so applying phonics in a reading experience, reading isn't just about knowing sound skill relationships. It's about decoding. Now, I'd heard about decoding before, but decoding is correctly pronouncing words. And in order to truly read, they need to be able to make meaning of what they decode. We need to give them experience making meaning of those words also. But before they can make meaning while reading, they must be able to decode the words first. So that's what we'll start, learning to decode. So let's think about back to learning to drive. Once I got my learner's permit, where I went to a parking lot, a big empty church parking lot. I'm not sure where you all would have gone, but my parents thought that was a nice, safe place to let me start to drive. Why? Because it's a place where I could gain some driving experience and build my confidence in driving. And what made that safe? Well, there's no other distractions around. There weren't any people. There weren't any other cars around. There weren't tiny lanes or tight curves. And this is how students should practice decoding sounds and words. So like maybe no other distractions around, as in no other words around. I was surprised how many curriculums start with words. And it's like, well, they don't know the sounds yet. How can you start with words? And there's no new and unknown skills bombarding them here and here if they just focus on the sounds first. And also, they don't need to focus on understanding sentences right away. They just focus on the letters in a word, and they need to decode those. So I thought there was a decoding parking lot. And that would be having a targeted word list. That's a safe place for them to start after they've learned the single individual sounds. And by targeted, I mean that these words contain the new skill that they are learning. And this way they can safely navigate in learning to read. They see this new skill, and then they practice sounding it out inside of a word. It's not a sentence or a paragraph yet, but they don't have to worry about the meaning of the words even. They're just reading the words that they come to, that, let's say, if they're learning about the SH says shh. They can have that time to practice and apply their knowledge of the law, like words in dish, fish, wish, cash, mash, however. And just because that's a word list and they don't need to think about the meaning of those words, doesn't mean that needs to be boring. You know how they would just do, they just say, read the words. And even when, to back up a little bit, even when they're first, if just say individual sounds, you want to try blending too, and I'll talk more about that tomorrow. But I had a student that would just, unfortunately, the word happened to be dis-a-m. It was one of the very first words in CLE, and he just kept saying that over and over. I would tell him to try to blend it together, and he just kept beside me. And all of a sudden, in his loudest voice, he says, damn! And it's like, oh, he got it. But, yeah, it just had to be that word, though. As far as not to make it boring, think whiteboards. Not everybody has whiteboards. We have blackboards, but I do like to bring in a small whiteboard. And I've also got colored chalk. That works also. But with the whiteboard, you can do different colored markers. You can do bingo boards or magnetic letters if you have something with magnetic. You can just take even something that they will stick to, the magnet letters will stick to, blend and read activities, or even decoding drills. So then after they move on beyond decoding, and the students are now becoming fluent at reading with that targeted skill. But they're not done yet, unfortunately. Do you think I should go from the parking lot to in a big empty church to the freeway? I'm pretty sure we all didn't do that. That would set us up for failure. If I would have gotten on the three lane or however many lane freeway you have, full of cars, I'm sure they'd be all passing me, honking, and the ones that were coming on would be very much upset with me going slow. And, you know, that's how we started out. It was slower than we definitely do now. There would be a very strong likelihood that I could get into an accident even. And then how would I feel about driving? There again, I feel like a failure, because I would have, in the church parking lot, I would have thought, hey, I knew how to drive, because I did really good there. But the freeway would be way too much for me then. Now I would probably not be as eager to get out on the road to drive if I would have been in an accident or hurt somebody else in the process. So, but has that ever that kind of thing happened to your students? They felt so good after being able to read the word lists, like dish, wish, fish. But now there are sight words. There's other words, lists, digraphs. And they're trying to make meaning of what they're reading. And they go from the parking lot to the freeway, in so many words, and they feel defeated, unconfident, and turned off from reading. So if we would master the parking lot, we can go and drive in the neighborhood. There'd be a little bit more cars, but not as crowded as the freeway. There would be defined lanes, but the speed limit is still slow in the neighborhood. There would be stop signs, but not a ton of traffic. You'd have to apply a few more of the driving laws in the neighborhood, but it would be a safe place to progress to and build your confidence in driving. And so I thought of that as sentences as your neighborhood. So they go from letters, sounds, to words, and then to sentences. So there are more words now, but they're words they can still decode, pronounce. There are sight words, but ones they've already mastered. And one curriculum said that they need to learn all the sounds of the alphabet, plus like the digraphs, and then they can start reading. One thing I've liked about CLE is they learn a few consonants, then they learn the vowel, and then they can put some words together and do a little bit at a time instead of not doing learning all those sounds and then trying to remember all those sounds when you're trying to start reading. So back to, there's meaning to be made, and it's a simple thought in a short sentence. You don't usually start out with long sentences. And you let them practice and practice in the context of a simple sentence. For example, like I have here on the board, if we're teaching the digraph, shh, I see a blue fish, the dish is pink, I wish for a fish. These sentences are simple, but they're also ones that they can decode. And there's meaning to be made. So the targeted skill, in this case SH, is used in real words, and these words are in context with a sentence. And they will make sense to your student, but I wouldn't at this point include any words that they didn't know, because you want them to be confidence builder sentences and getting that experience in reading. So before you even attempt to read a sentence, or we would read a sentence, especially if doing the SH words, I would tell my students to see if they can find the SH words in the sentence, and instead of me doing it, I would have them do it, because if I do it, they're less likely to remember it later. So I would usually start with one student and have them just find the SH and have them trace over it. And have the next student do the next one, and so forth, so on, until they're all done. And even like this one has two of them in the sentence. Great. Students think that's the neatest thing when there's something simple as that. Oh, there's two of them in there, that they can find them. And that gives them confidence and that they can do it. So, and when they get excited, it's easy for you to get excited. And if you, like they said, oh, I don't remember where it was earlier today, about your enthusiasm. If you have enthusiasm, your students will have enthusiasm. So once we've highlighted the words in this targeted skill of SH, we practice reading just the words. And we'll do a lot of it together. So if you have a faster student and a really slow student, this will help mostly the really slow student and keep them together, like fish, dish, and always point to what you are talking about too, because that draws their attention to that and keeps them focused on the lesson. Wish, fish. And in relating this back to driving, you can get really confident in driving in the neighborhood after that. You learn, you know, whatever, if sentences are a neighborhood. And it just doesn't happen in one day. In driving the neighborhood, I can't tell you how many times I just drove slow. And looking back, it seemed really slow. But my mom would always hang on to the bar up there, you know, and look so scared. Anyway, set multiple days in a row for reading the sentences in just the same way as I drove it multiple times in the neighborhood. Don't just read it once. You're cheating them of that reading experience and the opportunity to build fluency and confidence in reading. So one tip that I don't even know where it came from. I started it years ago, but I started it with tally marks. And my reason for using tally marks were that they learn it in math. Might as well teach them how to do it in reading. And that way when it comes to math, oh, I know what these are. But another idea I saw somewhere else was to have smiley faces. And not that you need to put them in CLE, they have reading lists. Okay? Or word lists, excuse me. And by those word lists, they can have your students, they love drawing smiley faces. So you could have them draw three smiley faces near this word list. And if you want them to say this word list to themselves three times, you tell them, okay, after we've gone over the words, I want you to practice this list three times. And once you get done with it one time, you can take the smiley face and with your color crayon or whatever, and you can color it in. You read it again, and you can color it in the next one, and then for the last one. That same idea works with tally marks. I usually, depends on how long the list was, I would have them actually read it five times. But that's up to you and the time. And then after that, I had them do it to themselves. I would have them say it to me and see I would actually time them, 23 seconds, some to 9 seconds, depends what the words are, but some can get really fast. And that helps them build confidence in that, in reading. And that's what we want as teachers. So now it's time to leave that safe neighborhood and drive on into town to Main Street. At least that's what we have in Estacada. On Main Street, there are more cars. Just like in passages or paragraphs, there are more words. On Main Street, there's traffic lights and four-way stops. And so there would be, in driving, there'd be new laws I need to apply in driving. And that's the way it is with passages. There's more sentences, there's more words, and more punctuation. But you know that what else is near Main Street? At least what we have in our town is Granny's. And suddenly that drive becomes really meaningful because Granny's has ice cream, and not just any ice cream cone. There are huge ice cream cones. They seem to have gotten shorter over the years, but anyway. So now I'm even more motivated to go drive in town. There's a lot more things in town. And so just like that, in passages or paragraphs, they tell a story, which there's a lot more meaning to be made in their words. And so it's not just decoding of the words and reading memorized sight words. They need to understand the story. And for new readers, this is, can be exciting or intimidating, but it can be motivating too. So like with this little passage here, bad dog, it says, bad dog, the dog got the pad. She is mad, dad is sad. No, dog, no, do not get the pad. Then you have two, there's a lot of this, especially in CLE, for just little things, or at, even after the story they read, there would be questions to answer. And I don't know how other people do it, but what I did, I would have them read the sentence, the blank got the pad. And I would have them read the sentence with each of those three words in the sentence before they did anything. The dog got the pad, the she got the pad, the dad got the pad. If they would try to do that without reading the three words, a lot of the time, not all the time, a lot of the times they would get something wrong. So reading, it was important to read each of those in the sentence. And then, oh yeah, that makes sense. There's some of them, you would think that, oh, that's so obvious, they know that. But if they don't read it in there, it, they might just put any old answer because they don't understand. In learning to read, and it doesn't come as fast for them as it does for us yet. For the second question, dad is sad, dad is mad, dad is bad. Then they see they need to remember, what did the story say? Not that they're just reading words now, they do need to remember and make meaning of what they read. Did the story say dad was mad? Did the story say dad was sad? Or dad was bad? So do you see how this decodable passage includes decoding practice? It will build confidence and fluency, and also, which I haven't talked about too much, is you can see where their comprehension of the story is also. And for me as a teacher, that's the one thing that I get excited when they can get excited about what they're reading and when they accomplish something. And it's just like that feeling of I just drove myself to town or Granny's and got ice cream. And they turn it into I just read the story and it made sense. So explicit instruction of sound skill relationships is essential to phonics. But a targeted word list is not enough to achieve phonics mastery. It's simply not enough for your readers to become fluent with that skill. So they need that reading experience. And I probably couldn't stress that enough. If you as a teacher don't have time, if you're teaching multiple grades especially, time to get up in them all that experience you need to, don't just rely on yourself to do it and say, okay, we don't have time for it that day. That's okay, we'll just go on, you know, do what we can. Well, you can also rely on other students. In your classroom, if you have the older students, you can also put a struggling reader with one that's confident in reading and have them read to each other. You can also, especially when I taught four grades at a time, I asked the other teachers, do you have a student that has extra time? Send them over. And they would. And I'd have students read to them. And not always just from their book that they give you in the reading lesson. I have other books that I like to, just to give them something different to read and to be excited about. But also try not to give them something too hard that they can't read and can't feel good about reading. So something that would be a confidence builder. And sometimes you actually have to make up little stories of your own with the letters that they have learned. And that can be interesting. So give them the experience. Give them experience behind the wheel, the reading wheel, each and every time that something new is taught. So a few more things that I do while teaching phonics especially is first I'll teach the skill and they will read and write words with that skill after that. It depends where we are in the lessons. Just trying to be general right now. Read and write sentences, words with that skill, then sentences, and continue to review past skills And one thing which is nice about CLE, they tell you everything that you need to do as a teacher. They'll even say this. And you can say exactly what they say. But for some students, even then, that's not enough, especially for review. They might say, review, well, the past 4 letters. Well, a lot of the times I will review all the letters they've learned. Because a lot of students need that review. That review, I would say, is very important. That's not something you want to skip because you don't have time. Some have, I guess what you call, better memories than others. And these steps are not, especially review, are not a waste of time. Never a waste of time. In fact, every single step builds their confidence, builds their experience in reading. And before you know it, your students are cruising through text and driving on autopilot like we are on our way home from school. And when you're doing that, you're not thinking about the gas, you're not thinking about the brake, you just do it. It comes naturally. And so there again with them, they won't be thinking about it like with the SH. They won't be thinking SH says shh. It just comes naturally. It's ingrained in their minds now after they've learned it. In no time, they'll be driving down the freeways of reading confidently. So are there any questions you may have? And also, have any of you thought of something that you would like for me to talk about in the next 2 classes, especially if you're not teaching CLE? In objects?
Yeah.
All the time. That's a good thing you brought that up. I brought a lot of things to show you, things you can use, and things that some I've thought of. That's one thing about my sister. She's not as, maybe, let's see, how would she put it, as creative as I am, but she is good in that taking a reading lesson, or, for example, she can come up with a game or something. Me, I'd probably be thinking too hard about it or whatever, and she can just come up with something you can do right like that. So there, you know, I think we should be able to draw from other people's experiences, I guess, or their natural gift in certain areas. And I would say don't be afraid to ask, especially parents, how best their child learns. They know a lot more about them than you do.
I teach the BSR, and I was like wondering, last year was my first year, and I wondered how to squash everything in it. It's a lot in a reading lesson. Cover like a lot of review, and some of it is just more out of different interesting things to do with them. And I love to do it all, but I would just love to hear like tips on how to be efficient with your class time, and like, you know, can you kind of squash your reading story a little bit, or kind of zoom through that a little faster? Is that really important? Or how does that work?
You have till 3. That bell was not correct.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
The reading story for BSR is like all written out for you, and you can just read it, and I did that some, but I think it's nice to keep it kind of.
I can't remember how long they were.
They're pretty
long. Are they more than one, like, typed up one page?
Yeah.
Wow. Because, like, for the CLE stories, they're not as, some are longer than others, but there's ways to incorporate things into the story and make it more interesting. And I remember, it's been a while since I taught BSR, there was lots of worksheets. And some of them are repetitive. So you could, if you wanted to do another way of teaching that skill, you could look at your papers, see which ones are the same idea, and say, okay, well, I'll do this one of this, and maybe we'll do something else. Because there's lots of ways to make it fun. Because when they start doing something that's paper after paper after paper, especially if it's writing, and especially in the first couple months of school, their hands get tired, especially if they're not holding their pencil correctly. But that, I guess that has to do with writing. Because, yeah, I was watching someone else teach you to write, and if they don't hold the pencil correctly, that you use more of your elbow and your shoulder, and they get tired very easily. So if you can incorporate something else into teaching that same concept. So yeah, I'll have a bunch of that tomorrow, and especially Thursday. I want Thursday to be more showing you things you can use, and I have a bunch of papers for you to take home of games, songs, and different things you can incorporate into your classroom. Anything else?
I taught BSR the first year I taught, and I tended to skip the story, like maybe read a month a week, because I can't really remember, but are they the same as their reading story? Or slightly, with a little bit of wording in some places, explain a little more. Okay, that's what I'm thinking. And so, why it's three grades and some really struggling students, and so I didn't have time to read that big long story to them and then try to get the reading story read.
Yeah, it's actually better for them to read than for you to read. I mean, yes, you, and that's one thing I'll point out tomorrow, you want to model reading yourself and writing so that they can know the spacing of words as they are reading, make it easier for them to read. But if it's repetitive and something, you might as well let them do it versus you reading.
Or read like my mom did and just skip a whole bunch. And
there you go.
As long as they get it, well, and then if they're reading story being the same story, then, yeah.
So there are some teachers, and I didn't experience this much, that they had too much time in school, and they needed to find things for their students to do. In that area, I would say it was finding something that they could do on their own. So that's what I did. I found things that they can do on their own or with another student so that I would have time for the other students also. Because first grade is a very, even second grade, they very much rely on you to tell them what to do next. And if you can have something that's there and still learning about the lesson so that you don't have to be right there supervising them, that I say it's the better. Get them to be independent. With C.
Go ahead. I'm going to have six grades all together.
Six?
Yeah. And for, I'm going to have first grade and then fourth through eighth.
Okay.
And I was wondering, like, if I could find stuff that first grade can do on their own one with the rest of them or whatever.
Okay.
Like, how you manage your time, I guess, to reach your own.
Yeah, one thing, and I didn't include this in the other topic, and I don't think I'll be doing it this year because I only have one first grader, was other years when I had like four grades, I would have the first graders after story time. I'm guessing you all have story time. There's another way to model reading there. I would have the first graders rest. Just put their heads on their desk and just rest. Some even actually fell asleep. So it's like, you know, so some actually need that rest time. So that's one thing that you can have them do or have. While you're, I would teach a class then while they'd be doing that. And that's, you also have to, in that, you have to be prepared. You can't come to school and expect for your first grader to work on their own if you don't have nothing prepared for them to do it. You do have to have like sheets or objects or things for them to do prepared so you don't have to go running after them also. I guess one of them we have time, is Play-Doh. I used that, well, some people use clay. Well, I had, excuse me, I had Play-Doh. And I would have them do, they can see it in 3D, the letter. And some things, say like with children with dyslexia, that helps a lot. They would do the letter. And then when they graduated to words, I'd have them do their words. I even had them do spelling words when it got to be that far, do their spelling words in Play-Doh. They thought this was the greatest thing. And then if there was extra time that day, I'd say you can spend such and such amount of time and just make pictures out of the Play-Doh. I have pictures I took of their Play-Doh of people and animals and things. And they get, there's a lot of things you can do with just Play-Doh. Any other questions yet?